Well, hey, Sean.
Hey, John.
So Laurel is off this week, and I think you know what that means.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows podcast bylaws say that when Laurel is off, we get to play Weezer's Blue Album.
That is correct. But what song you think we should play this week?
You know, I actually have a pretty good idea this week, I think. We haven't used it before, and I feel like it fits this moment we are living.
Yeah, what you thinking?
I'm thinking Only in Dreams.
Ooh, that is a good one. But what's the angle here? What's the tie-in?
Okay, so think about it this way. It's May 1st as we're recording this podcast. That means that just 3 months ago, it was February 1st. Could you have imagined in your wildest dreams that we would be experiencing what we are experiencing now?
No, I can honestly say that I could not.
And there's more to it than that. I mean, there's this huge case before the state Supreme Court right now. They could either uphold or strike down Wisconsin's stay-at-home order. I mean, it feels like a turning point, you know? It's kind of hard to even dream what Wisconsin's going to look like 3 months from now.
I see what you did there. Well, let's talk about it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
And I'm Sean Johnson.
This week, to paraphrase the great Rivers Cuomo, Only in Dreams, let's talk about what it means.
See what it means. Reach out our hands. Hold on to hers. But when we wait, it's all in a waste. And so it seems. Only dreams.
So that alt rock gem, obviously, as we mentioned in the intro, is Weezer's Only in Dreams from their 1994 self-titled album Weezer, known to pretty much everybody in the world as the Blue Album because of its blue cover. I gotta say, that's one of my favorite songs on the album. The bass line is solid, it's way longer than a lot of the other songs, so you know, you can really get into it. And it's the last song, so it ties the whole album together.
Yeah, I totally agree. You really get to soak it up where some of the other tracks are just like 2 minutes, Only in Dreams. It's complex. There's a lot to it. Kind of like life in a pandemic and a complicated Supreme Court challenge involving separation of powers.
We're just so good with these metaphors. Spot on.
Yeah, that's one way of referring to what we're doing now.
So where do we start? Where do we dive in with this whole case and the possible dreamlike futures of Wisconsin's stay-at-home order?
So I know we talked about the case itself a little bit on last week's podcast, but just to reset so everybody's on the same page here, this was a lawsuit brought by Republican lawmakers on behalf of the legislature, but really you could say by Republican legislative leaders, challenging the stay-at-home extension issued by Governor Tony Evers' Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm. Palm issued this order that runs through May 26th using powers given to her under state law to deal with communicable diseases. Republicans said she went too far with that when the state issues an order like that, it needs the legislature's input, you know, that they need to have power to give it kind of an up or down vote or require changes. So they asked the state Supreme Court to block the Safer at Home extension and give the Evers administration 6 days to craft a new one. So the lawsuit was filed last week. The state Supreme Court did not immediately jump in and strike down the law. You know, they let parties brief in the case. The governor's office came back and issued briefs this week. Republican lawmakers issued their own briefs this week. And that's where we are as we record this podcast, is we are awaiting word from the state Supreme Court, you know, technically on whether or not they're going to hear this case as an original action. You know, and it's essentially an expedited case that goes right to them instead of going through the rest of the court system. And then the bigger question is, you know, whether or not they're going to let the law stand or strike it down. And if they strike it down, you know, what are their parameters going to be?
And since we're recording this podcast early in the day and there's still time for the court to, do things, do we want to really quick throw it to future John here to see if there's anything we need to catch up on?
I think it's a pretty good idea with something this big. Courts like to issue consequential orders on Friday afternoon, and
they seem to have a habit of doing that.
It's their best. It's like they're most focused on Friday. Like, okay, I can finally get this done. Let's issue this big order that's going to like totally upend the world. Seems like that could happen. So let's just throw it to future John for an update on anything that the court did today. Future John?
From the future, I'm Future John. The state Supreme Court announced late Friday afternoon that it will hear the Republican challenge to Wisconsin's Safer at Home order. The court scheduled oral arguments in the case for Tuesday, but the court did not rule on the merits of the case. Now back to the recent past.
That was Future John, our correspondent from the future, helping us stay abreast of news we do not yet know in the past. Thank you, as always, Future John.
All right, so back to the present, or maybe the recent past of what happened this week. Maybe it makes sense to talk about first the scenario that the Evers administration is hoping for and what they sort of laid out in their brief to the court, their argument about why they think that the governor's administration's Safer at Home order should stand. What did they say? What did they tell the court?
Their basic argument is kind of twofold. And I mean, they filed a lengthy brief, so there are many more folds, but I'm going to focus on two.
Just the two main folds.
It's the two main folds. One is that Andrea Palm and the DHS have well-established authority to do what they did by issuing these orders. You know, these were not orders issued by Governor Tony Evers using a different set of emergency powers that expire after 60 days and that the legislature can revoke at any time. These are orders that are given to the Department of Health Services to deal with communicable diseases, and they are broad. I mean, if you read the law, it gives her extremely broad authority to deal with communicable diseases, to shut things down, including schools and churches. And so that is what she has done with these orders. And their second point is basically that there's a good reason that states like Wisconsin have these laws. And that is that when you're dealing with communicable diseases, in this case, the COVID-19 pandemic, information is changing fast. The disease could be traveling fast. States need to take quick action, as the state of Wisconsin did in this case. In our case, that meant going from, if you remember early on in this pandemic, Evers was saying, I don't really want to shut things down. I think we can go without it. A few days later, he kind of, the Evers administration, Andrea Palm, issued the stay-at-home order and shut it down. They were saying, they told the court that they were doing this in reaction to quickly changing data on how fast COVID-19 was traveling. So that's their argument, is that if you slow that down, you are going to hamper the state's ability to respond to something that we don't understand. And so they're saying, don't do that. Let us, the state, react to this pandemic quickly and not have to wait for the legislature to get involved.
So it would be fair to say that the Evers administration's dream scenario here would be that the court comes back and says, yes, the secretary of DHS has the authority to sort of make these calls, and that they could sort of go on with their plan for reopening the state based on, what they think is best and not have to include the legislature here.
Yeah, and to be clear on what the Evers plan is, right now it is to keep the state closed down until May 26th, but Evers has said could be sooner than that, could be later than that. It depends on what they're seeing based on a number of metrics. I think the key metrics that the governor's laid out have to do with testing. He wants to increase testing. He wants to have 86,000 tests a week. You know, that's a lot. He wants to have 1,000 contact tracers out there following people who have come down with COVID-19, finding out who they've been in contact with to try to isolate the disease, basically find out where it's traveling and be able to respond to it more nimbly. And he wants a decrease in percentage of positive cases too, a 14-day trend of decreasing positive cases of COVID-19 and a decreasing trend of flu-like symptoms at hospitals. So the Evers future is kind of uncertain, you know. He says we need to have the power, my administration needs to have the power to deal with this stuff and adapt to what's happening with the virus. But we don't know what that means in terms of a hard timeline of when the state reopens or, you know, whether a new stay-at-home order is issued.
So you hinted at it a little bit, but what is the scenario that Republican lawmakers would be dreaming about for how they would want to handle things going forward?
So I think it's important to say that they haven't come out with a concrete plan and said, this is what we want for sure. Their lawsuit is more saying that Secretary Palm exceeded her authority as the executive branch and that the legislature needs a seat at the table to come up with this stuff. But they don't say exactly what the alternative is. That said, what they're looking for, if the court strikes Evers down, is they've asked the court to give a 6-day stay. I don't think the court would be bound by their suggestion, but they're suggesting a 6-day stay that would, in theory, give the two sides time to hash out a compromise. So if they do that, then Evers and Republican legislators have to decide what stay-at-home looks like going forward. And we know that Republican lawmakers have been saying for weeks now that there needs to be a more regional approach to stay-at-home, that in counties with very small number of cases, especially rural counties, there should not be the same types of restrictions as there are in larger counties. Dane in Milwaukee is what we were talking about a while ago. We're now talking about Brown County because that's where this spike in cases has been at meatpacking plants. But they're saying focus on the situation where it is and don't apply these restrictions everywhere else.
So Republicans are asking for the chance to work with the governor under administrative rules to reach a deal, which, you know, sounds like sort of a dreamlike scenario. I can just keep inserting, you know, dream metaphors in there, just keep wedging them in there.
That's how it works.
But in reality, you know, there have been a lot of situations where the Republican-controlled legislature and Evers, a Democrat, have not agreed on things. You know, so what does it look like if they're not able to reach a deal, assuming the court rules in favor of Republican lawmakers here?
Yeah, and I think there's like a couple ways that that could happen. First, they're asking specifically for the Evers administration to issue any future orders through the administrative rulemaking process. But they've also given the court a suggestion for a 6-day deadline, basically. The Evers administration is saying, look, you cannot go through the rulemaking process in 6 days. It takes longer than that under law. You know, it just can't be done. And so they're saying, like, practically, even if we wanted to do that and we could reach an agreement through that process, it can't be done. So let's say either it can't be done procedurally or it just can't be done. They don't see eye to eye. Mm-hmm. What you could then have is the situation where there's a 72 county approach, and that instead of the state issuing one order that covers everybody, it would be up to counties to decide, are we open or are we closed? You know, Dane and Milwaukee could decide to issue their own orders or could not. You can imagine smaller rural counties would potentially be open without restrictions. you know, the level of regulation for COVID-19 becomes very localized, and you would have it treated differently in different parts of the state.
So it was sort of like a window into what that could potentially look like. You covered a hearing this week in the assembly where Republicans and business groups were sort of outlining their dream for what that could potentially look like.
Yeah, and this is not a bill. You know, the Republicans have not signed on to something, but they have kind of rallied around this plan by Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which WMC is calling the Back to Business Plan.
Not to be confused with the Badger Bounce Back Plan.
Nope, that's Governor Evers' plan. Back to Business is WMC. Badger Bounce Back is Governor Evers.
Both going with solid alliteration, though.
Yeah. Apparently,
and the word back.
When in a pandemic, you got to fight alliteration with alliteration is what we're learning. I mean, we're learning the rules to this all the time, and that apparently is one of the rules. So we sort of alluded to the governor's plan earlier in terms of what his Badger Bounce Back plan is. More testing, a decrease in positive test results, more contact tracing. You know, it's based on the numbers that they're seeing in terms of who has COVID-19, who's being tested for COVID-19. The WMC plan is not based on testing. And they said very clearly that this is meant to replace the governor's plan. They don't see it as working in concert with these testing benchmarks. They're saying, we're not going to wait to reopen the state till we hit those benchmarks. We're going to reopen, and here's what it's going to look like.
So we're going to get back to business, as it were.
That is correct. That is correct. It's like they thought that out when they put that fancy title in there. So back to business is essentially it outlines what type of preventive measures businesses have to take based on the kind of business they do and where they do it. So you basically just plug in some basic information. This is their idea. A business would go to the state website, plug in some really basic info about what kind of work they do. And that's got like a business code that is a nationalized code. And then where are you doing it? And then it spits out kind of a score on what you need to do in terms of protecting your workers and your customers. So if you're in a rural county with a low number of cases and your nearby hospital has plenty of capacity and you're doing work that does not require, you know, a lot of face-to-face contact with customers potentially, you maybe don't have to take as restrictive of measures as somebody who's in a more dense urban area and does something where you are more in close proximity with people and where COVID-19 could spread more easily.
So that WMC plan was sort of a big part of this hearing that you mentioned that you covered this week. There were also representatives from like restaurant groups and the Tavern League. And you want to just paint a picture of sort of what was talked about during this hearing, which was sort of, you know, I would say, geared towards being in favor of opening things back up. Is it fair to say?
I would say it's fair to say. So the hearing was officially an informational hearing about this WMC plan. But, you know, obvious from the comments, it was a friendly audience. Republicans have been talking about this plan in a positive way for a while now. And, you know, it was invited speakers only, too. So this wasn't like a public hearing where you have, I can imagine you would have had probably doctors and nurses in there weighing in on not reopening the state, balanced against businesses saying we need to. This was the business perspective. But I say there was some pretty interesting testimony in there from businesses who are, you know, they are definitely affected by what's going on right now. There was so much I'm not going to try to sum up the whole hearing for you, but I did find the testimony.
No, I think you should.
Okay, well, the hearing started with the taking of attendance.
Yes,
and it was interesting because most lawmakers were in the room, but they sat 6 feet apart. Some of them had masks on, some of them didn't.
I thought this was a virtual hearing. This was actually at the Capitol hearing?
This was actually at the Capitol, and most lawmakers were there in person. So we're sort of, things are changing a little bit, right? We just had a virtual session of the legislature where most people were not there, and now most people, I think, Republicans and Democrats, were in the room. So you're seeing kind of attitudes shift a little bit. Some people had masks on that they would wear, but then when it was their turn to talk, they would take the masks off, which is, this is sort of where we're at in this world of the new world of wearing masks. Like, the mask is there to protect everybody else, really, so that you're not spitting into the world. But when people talk, they tend to take the masks off.
Okay, so maybe we're getting a little bit far afield here into the specifics about the hearing. But what was sort of said? What was the mood? What was the vibe?
Okay, so broadly speaking, all of these business groups were in favor of the WMC plan. They were in favor of reopening. A lot of them were saying, look, we already have businesses in Wisconsin that are opening, that are running. You know, grocery stores, for example, hardware stores, for example, Menards. I feel like this is sort of the biggest story of the week that we're not talking about. To go to some Menards now, customers have to wear masks. You know, that's just kind of a big change in our world. So anyway, they're asked.
And we know you like to go to Menards for fun, so that's a big deal for you.
I don't know if they're requiring them in Madison, actually, but yes, I do. You know, Menards is sort of a happy place for me to just walk around and kill an hour or two. But anyway, there are some business groups who got really specific with what they are doing in preparation for reopening or what they want to see in terms of a reopening. So let's start with like the Restaurant Association. They have their own plan. They're basically putting it out there. They call it, hold on, it has a name, John. Let's see if there's alliteration.
Is it alliterative?
No, it's not. It's not. I'm not sure. See, it's based off of the Back to Business plan loosely, but this is the Wisconsin Restaurant Promise. Well, anyway,
I mean, it has a ring to it, but it's not alliterative.
Yeah, and I think you would like the graphic design work on the poster that restaurants would put up in their establishments if they use this. But the Wisconsin Restaurant Promise is, you know, they are, for example, suggesting that restaurants could allow certain employees to wear gloves and masks, although that would not be mandated. They are saying that if restaurants sign up for this, they would require staff to pass health checks before their shifts, require tables and chairs to be sanitized after each use, require indoor seating to comply with, quote, appropriate social distancing guidelines. So that's their approach, that that we need to reopen. This disease isn't going to be gone until we have a vaccine. That could be a year and a half. It could be never. So we have to do something. It's basically the Restaurant Association's approach. One restaurant owner in particular, Bob Prosser, he's the owner of the Ishnala Supper Club in Lake Delton, told lawmakers he's already preparing for the possibility of reopening. He said he told his manager, order booze tomorrow. Order booze in anticipation that we can open. He also told the chef to order groceries that are non-perishable and said he was going to put an order in for beef, even though that wouldn't arrive immediately. Quote, I'll open with whatever I have. So he is kind of bracing for the stay-at-home order being lifted prior to Memorial Day. It's not a given, but that's kind of where he's at. The Tavern League was also pretty interesting, I thought. The president, Chris Marsicano, he owns the Village Supper Club in Delavan, said that his members were willing to adapt in order to reopen, even at a reduced capacity. quote, if the mandate comes down that we have to wear masks and gloves, that's fine. If we have to get rid of all of our paper menus and all the condiments on the table, that's fine. We'll do whatever it takes. I thought that was kind of interesting too, because I feel like the taverns sort of, they don't like to get bossed around, right? The Tavern League has a powerful lobby. Mm-hmm. They know that they're a powerful lobby, and they also feel like, this is my business. Don't tell me what to do. You kind of get that a lot. And here they are saying, we will abide by state regulations if it means we can reopen. So kind of specific there from the Tavern League and the Restaurant Association. Also, I thought it was interesting that the Restaurant Association was asked, what if you reopen and, you know, there's employees who don't feel safe going back to your business? And, you know, other business groups were asked the same question and kind of dodged. But Christine Hilmer, the president and CEO of the Restaurant Association, said they may lose their unemployment insurance. That may very well happen. But that's not just restaurants. That's every single sector. So that, I think that's kind of crucial information. If the state reopens, if these businesses that are closed now reopen, and so people have jobs to go back to, essentially, they could, you know, they're not going to be able to necessarily collect unemployment insurance if their employer has said it's safe to go back, and the state has kind of it through an indirect path said it's safe to go back.
So that's what we're hearing from businesses. But you mentioned it earlier, at least in the hearing, the voices we weren't hearing from was anybody from the public health side of things.
Yeah, because, I mean, public health experts have been very much on the side of the governor in terms of the way that the state should handle the pandemic. I mean, they are in favor of keeping things closed to slow it down while the state builds up supplies of PPE, personal protective equipment, masks, gloves, et cetera, while the state's testing capacity builds up and more people get tested, so more data is out there. That's where they're at. And so they were asked, they have actually filed amicus briefs in this lawsuit, and they had a conference call with reporters this week and, you know, were asked about what happens if we don't have an agreement between the governor and lawmakers, and we have this 72-county approach. James Conway at the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Global Health Initiative said, this is a contagious disease. We would pretty rapidly, within a week or two of lifting Safer at Home, start to see hotspots emerging in unpredictable areas. So that's where they're at on this, is that the science is not there to reopen safely.
So we've spent the last 20-some minutes talking about some pretty divergent dream scenarios, if you will. But where do we go from here?
Well, I'll just tell you what's going to happen. We've established that it's dreamlike and never before experienced. So I now will tell you what the future holds. Seems totally safe. I mean,
please do.
There's essentially a couple ways this could go. I think the prevailing wisdom is that the Wisconsin Supreme Court has a 5-2 conservative majority, and that this is a dispute between the legislature and the executive over rulemaking authority, you know, and separation of powers. And in previous separation of powers disputes, this court has sided with the legislature. So kind of seems like they might side with the legislature this time. And I think that's why, without reading minds, that could be why you see restaurant owners kind of preparing for a reopening in the near future, because we've all watched how this court and this legislature and this governor have kind of interplayed over the past few years. Alternatively, maybe they rule with the governor, or they kind of take their time, because, you know, this is not a court that has totally just, they're not like denying that COVID-19 is a thing. You know, they issued an order back in March that delayed jury trials until May 22nd. That's about the time the state's Safer at Home order expires. you know, that was a 5-2 order, meaning you had three conservatives joining two liberals to take a break from normal life in the hopes of sort of preventing the spread of COVID-19. And that was the case where you had like a very strong dissent from Justice Rebecca Bradley saying that it was essentially just striking down constitutional rights right then and there. So there is a possibility. I mean, there is a future where maybe the court doesn't do what a lot of us are expecting them to do and let some form of stay-at-home order stay in place for longer. But we should know soon enough, right?
Yeah, unless all of this is just one giant dream. Anyway, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Have you been dreaming of a way to get fresh and insightful news and analysis about Wisconsin state politics delivered to you almost every single week? Well, I'm here to tell you your dreams can come true when you subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And while you're there, help somebody else's dreams come true by making it easier to find when you leave a rating or review. And of course, you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime by going to wpr.org/politics.